Okay, welcome back. It's time for our first regular nightly coronavirus report, brought to you courtesy of Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, one of the world's foremost virologists, who has been with this program for a long time. And for the last, since middle of January, we've been doing, that's what, 2.5 months? We've been doing nightly programs on the virus, on the whole situation. Now, just when you get to the point where you think it's got to settle down a little bit, it gets crazier. It just gets crazier. And I'm talking about the Trump administration. And here's a little clip. First of all, Henry, welcome back. I'm glad to have you on board, as always. We always enjoy these programs very much. The two of us, and I think our listeners, get a lot of very valuable data from them. So thank you.
Well, it's good to be back. And like I thought, there'd be some interesting developments at the White House. So go ahead and play your clip there.
Here's our, we're going to take you now to the Rose Garden today, by virtue of digital magic, and let you hear the exchange between the president and two female journalists who were there to do their job and ask him questions, which they tried to do. But unfortunately, he didn't like the questions.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I've said many times that the U.S. is doing far better than any other country when it comes to testing.
Yes.
Why does that matter? Why is this a global competition to you if every day Americans are still losing their lives and we're still seeing more cases every day?
Well, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world. And maybe that's a question you should ask China. Don't ask me. Ask China that question, okay? When you ask them that question, you may get a very unusual answer. Yes, behind you, please.
Sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you. I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question
like
that.
That's not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
Okay. Anybody else? Please, go ahead in the back, please.
I have two questions.
No, it's okay.
But you pointed to me. I have two questions, Mr. President.
Next, please.
But you called on me.
I did, and you didn't respond, and now I'm calling on the young lady in the back, please.
I just wanted to let my colleague finish, but can I ask you
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And the Donald turns his back on one and all and exits stage left. Goodbye, Donald. Well, Henry, it just never stops, does it? He still reminds me of a Shakespearean tragic character, I'm telling you.
It was quite a show. And, he's had a lot of bad news since Friday. And, it always seems to come out whenever he hosts these press conferences and calls on reporters. And that's the reason he stopped them. Well, that and the Clorox, but essentially his performance it's been entertaining, and he is an entertainer, but he's supposed to be presidential, and it certainly wasn't. And this one, in case you didn't see exactly what the offense of the second reporter was that she waited to ask her question so the first reporter could get one more shot in, and because of that he didn't want to call on her anymore, so he wanted to skip over her. She held her ground, and he gave up his.
He did. He left.
It was pretty remarkable.
For you listeners out there who didn't see the clip either, the first reporter, when she came back at him and said, "Why did you ask that of me? Or why did you ask me that?" Well, she's Chinese. And he said, "Ask China." And she tried to turn it into some kind of a racist offense against her. But I don't think he's smart enough to do anything like that, especially not to a worldwide audience.
No, he just associates her with that. He did that. He does this all the time.
Yeah.
But In any event, he did walk off the stage, and not going to get real high marks for this one either. The presentation fell a little bit short. It was supposed to show that we're doing a lot of testing, but the key question was that could anybody be tested, which he always says they could. They admitted that they couldn't, and only those with symptoms could get tested. And of course, the whole idea on the testing front and in the area of increasing testing is that if he wants everybody to go back to work, workers are going to want, testing done for other people at the place of business. And that's going to involve testing people that are not symptomatic, that they're worried about the asymptomatic ones or the pre-symptomatic ones. And actually, that's what his problem is. If you recall, last week, it was becoming increasingly clear that the list of positive personnel associated with the West Wing of the White House was growing. And I had mentioned that there have been 34 Secret Service agents, and apparently that was 11 are currently infected, and mm-hmm. the remainder were previously infected. So that's how many Secret Service had tested positive. And
so 23 of them had it and got over it.
Correct.
And they've got antibodies. So you got a total of 34. Boy, that sounds to me like the virus has been running through the White House for quite a while.
Right, right. And they've been assuming that they could keep tabs on things by doing a lot of testing. But the first positive associated with Trump was only tested once a week. And so, that's not a very good frequency for somebody that's going to be in direct contact with the president. And then the second one that was positive, which was Katie Miller, who's Pence's press secretary, as it turns out, had been tested on Thursday, the day before she was positive. And according to Trump, anyway, which would probably be accurate because she was back in action on Friday, but he said she was negative on Thursday. And that's a damning statement. that kind of blew their whole their whole security operation, if you will.
Yeah.
Because she had gone to a rehabilitation center on Thursday morning. And at the center, I think Pence was delivering packages and he was on late night TV. And there was a whole controversy over that as to whether he was carrying in full boxes or empty boxes. But
yes.
aside from that, Katie Miller was there. And they've got photographs of her that morning talking to reporters. And she's the only one in the picture who's not wearing a mask. And while talking to the reporters Thursday morning, she coughed. Right. And then she said, it's not coronavirus. Don't worry. And it apparently was coronavirus. And coughing is certainly a symptom. So she was symptomatic Thursday morning. And then she subsequently tested negative. So that indicates that the tests that they're using may be fast, giving a result in 15 minutes, but it's known to have a 15% false negative Right.
Which and, we presented on this program a week ago or more.
Right. And so her test was a false negative. She was already symptomatic. Yep. They should have been able to pick that up on the test once symptoms. I mean, frequently they can pick up those that are asymptomatic. So she was symptomatic. She was tested. She came negative. And then she was exposing the reporters and the residents of a rehabilitation facility. And so keep your eyes out for that one, Woodbine in Alexandria, Virginia. They should start getting a slew of positives because they are generally fairly susceptible. And they were there for long enough to deliver to deliver the PPEs. I mean, it's kind of ironic that they delivered the PPP with coronavirus,
someone who's
no
infected.
Extra charge. Yeah.
No. Don't tip the driver.
They got the bonus package.
Yeah.
PPEs plus virus. You can test it out at home. You can try this at home. At the
rehabilitation home, anyway. That's right. What did Trump say about these cases of White House coronavirus? He said, "I felt no vulnerability whatsoever," end quote.
Right.
Super Donald.
Right. And so today, everybody's wearing a mask.
Except he won't
except
do it.
Donald. No,
he will
won't
not
do it.
Follow
and,
the guidelines.
And he doesn't. And he doesn't want Pence to do it. And Jared was there with a mask. Jared had a mask on. And rumor has it that there are several more positives, and including somebody fairly high up. And that's the latest rumor. I was hoping there'd be more information before tonight, but I suspect that words can only leak out by who isn't there. Now Pence, I'm a little confused because they had initially said that he was going to work from home. He wasn't coming in today. And then they said he did come in today.
Yeah.
And but they didn't have him scheduled to be in the press conference, which is basically by the task force, which he heads. So he's head of the task force, and he wasn't even on the schedule. And, of course, Stephen Hahn from the FDA, Robert Redfield from the CDC, and Tony Fauci from NIAID were all absent because they're all under quarantine because they all were exposed to Katie Miller.
So, the ranks are thinning. This is getting to be crazy. So, and you mentioned task force, Henry. That's just one of two task forces. And don't forget that, friends. There are two coronavirus task forces. One is official, and the other one is Jerry Kushner's, his own.
Right. Right. And he's, but he's wearing a mask. And I don't know who the high ranking individual that tested positive is. And,
You don't know?
I don't. But Stephen Miller is also under quarantine. And
of course,
he would be a likely character, right? Be high on the list. But whether he's tested positive or not, I don't know. I'm not sure who's tested positive. But,
well, there'll be leaks real quick. This White House is leak central.
The fact that there are that many Secret Service, and presumably they're tested fairly regularly, and in spite of being tested regularly, they've got 11 current and 23 or something former. That have tested positive. So they're not really controlling things very well. And And if there are that many Secret Service that are positive, then it's not surprising that other staff members of the president or vice president are positive. And, you know, some people are are assuming that there must be a connection between the two known positives in Trump and Pence's inner circle. But that really doesn't have to be the case if they've got 11 Secret Service agents that are positive. That, you know, it just sounds like the White House
See,
is
Trump,
crawling
look,
with virus.
Trump had to know about this. The Secret Service isn't going to keep that a secret. No pun.
Right.
Working for the president. He knew they were sick. He knew they were testing positive. He had to.
Right. And he's still not. he's still not wearing a mask. And they even ask other people that Pence had this group of CEOs from food industry, and they were there to have a meeting with him, and they all had masks on. And then somebody from the staff came by and asked them to remove their masks.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
They were protecting themselves from Pence, potentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. So they requested that they all remove their masks. It's just classic. He not only should not be in charge of a pandemic, he shouldn't be having anything to do with the pandemic. Trump and video cameras are a very bad combination. And he just looks worse every day because
he does.
He just can't do anything right, and he's got to make the wrong choice, and so this. You know,
he's been doing that since early January, making the wrong choices almost every step of the way.
And the pandemic is only accentuating things, and. The pandemic coupled with the virus now working on the White House grounds, and who knows how many bodies with a test it's got a 15% false negative rate. He has no idea where the virus is and isn't. He just knows. Yeah, who was tested, but that didn't tell him anything about Katie Miller. He told him that she was negative on Thursday when she was coughing.
Mm-hmm.
And probably infecting people at that rehab clinic and whoever else, you know, rode back and forth. I mean, it was to Alexandria, Virginia, so probably by car.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But who, and it's not really that clear who the six people on the plane were that were planning to go to Iowa, I guess, on Friday that ended up deplaning and did not go to Iowa. But they were close contacts of her, and they... Theoretically, you know, reportedly, I should say, tested negative, but were told to quarantine at home. So they didn't go to Iowa and they didn't stick around. But so it's not really clear, you know, who's missing and who's being quarantined other than the ones that, you know, the scientists, you know, that became public fairly quickly. But which aides are home quarantining now. And then the order was that, you know, everybody that can home quarantine do so. So that, I mean, not home quarantine, but work from home. So, so they've got two groups that are at home, those that are working at home and those that are quarantined at home. And so mm-hmm. as long as they put everybody in that same kind of status, it makes it harder to figure out who's at home because they're under quarantine and who's at home because they were told to work there and work from there. And now they are all supposed to be wearing masks. So there's, you know, a lot of staff that are wearing masks. But, you know, this is just very bad timing because, you know, it's kind of trying to get all these states to open up and end their lockdowns. And, you know, the polls kind of indicate quite a few people are concerned. And the concern is more that the lockdown will be ended too early as opposed to that it's going to destroy the economy. I mean, they're both concerns, but.
The economy would take 5 or 6 years
right.
to get the economy right. back to the condition it was in. Here's what Trump said, for all of you who may have missed this, about the mask. Mr. Trump said he required the policy that everyone in the White House wear a mask. But he appeared without a mask in the Rose Garden for the briefing today and claimed he didn't need to follow the directive, his own directive, because he, quote, kept far away from everyone, end quote. And then he said, I think we're doing a good job containing it. So he's not going to wear the mask. I'm telling you, you never see him in a mask. Well, I said that last week. It won't happen. He's too vain.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Well, he had his own lectern. I mean, they used two of them today. So he had one. He was the only one that spoke from that one. And then the two others that showed slides were at a separate lectern. So I mean, that's one of the noticeable changes. But he also says he doesn't need a mask because he's been tested by a test that gives false negatives, but he's been tested. And even if the test was accurate, you know, testing in the morning doesn't mean he's not infected by the afternoon, especially if he's at the White House. I mean, there's probably more virus at the White House than any place else in Washington.
It's obvious that the virus is happily ensconced at the White House. Obvious.
Right. And so the argument that these guys don't need masks because they've been tested shows that even if you're tested on a daily basis, it doesn't prevent you from having contact with people.
Right.
In part because the test said you're negative, even though you're coughing. And then the next day it says you're positive. So that wasn't a coincidence, that coughing.
Nope.
And even though I laughed when I said it was coronavirus, the text indicated that the joke was on Katie. But anyway, so he's trying to convince everybody to go back to work and don't worry about the fact that we don't have tests for you. We only test people that are symptomatic. And you know, you're not so much worried about what the status of somebody that's symptomatic is, and most of them are just going to assume that they're coughing, especially this time of year where flu season's over. So anybody coughing now, they're just going to assume that they're coughing because they've got the coronavirus. They're worried about the people that aren't coughing, the ones that are asymptomatic, that are already infected, and therefore can infect others at the workplace. And but it appears that others really don't care. I mean, there were footage over the weekend of restaurants that opened up and they were crowded and nobody was wearing masks. And and then there was a Sunday service. I'm not sure where it was, but that was packed and nobody was wearing masks, but they did a temperature check at the door. So, you know, 70% of those that are infected with the virus do not have mm-hmm. a temperature.
At all.
So they get, right. So you can do the temperature check, which is one way to get a false negative, or you can do these rapid tests that 15 minutes can give you the wrong answer. Or
now, are these rapid tests the antibody tests, Henry?
No, they're actually a PCR test.
PCR?
It's a PCR test that the way they do it and the temperature they do it and that machine that Trump took out and was holding in his arms at the a few weeks ago. It processes it quickly. It's supposed to get results, I think, in 13 minutes. But these are always trade-offs. One of the trade-offs is it gives you a result quickly, and it's designed to give you a quick result. But,
well, 85% accuracy.
Right. It's got a relatively high false negative number, and so the sensitivity isn't there, or it isn't as high as it could be. Other ones are, 95 or 99%. But they take longer. And so they get a quick result, but, if you're tested every day, it's not that bad. If you get one bad one, then you'll get a good one the next time. But, it sounds like, they were only testing some of the people once a week. So, if you're tested once a mm-hmm. week and you, mm-hmm. and you get a false negative, you can go another, you can go a full week and be, infectious. So, and if it stays mild, you might, if it gets a little bit more than mild, you might say, I was just tested and I was negative, so I don't know what I got here, but it's not the coronavirus. Because,
just allergies. It's pollen.
Right,
don't worry.
Right. So that was one of the concerns. That was one of the concerns about the antibody test. The concern about the antibody test is people will get a false positive, and that could be because it's not specific enough and it picks up other coronaviruses, and there's several other coronaviruses that are just cold viruses, and they don't really produce serious disease, but part of the reason they don't produce serious disease is you make antibodies, and so if the antibodies against a more benign coronavirus cross-reacts in the assay that they're looking for, SARS-CoV-2 antibodies, then you'll get a false reading. It'll say you're positive, and you'll think that you're positive for the SARS-CoV-2, and therefore you'll have immunity. And even if others in the area, at your work location are positive, you've got antibodies for it, so it's not really going to be, a problem for you. And it creates that false sense of security. And really, those antibodies probably are not. They're good enough to work on the assay, but they're not necessarily going to give you protection against the SARS-CoV if you got an OC43 antibody. In any event, what's going to happen?
Here's a little sideline. This is important. Hold on. The antibody test, let me just read this quote. This is Mike Adams wrote this up. Pretty good research here. At the time Stanford did the study, there weren't any FDA-approved coronavirus antibody tests for clinical use. But for research purposes, the team purchased antibody tests from Premier Biotech in Minnesota. Premier has started marketing a COVID-19 antibody test, but it didn't make it. The test listed on the company's website, and that it appears Stanford used in its tests, is from the Hangzhou Biotech, an established Chinese lab test vendor. So apparently at least some of the antibody tests are being made in China. And as we know, a lot of the test kits, the PCR test kits, came from China defective. Not all of them, but a lot of them were defective. Several countries have been very upset about that and sent them back. So we really have an issue here, do we not, about the viability of accuracy in terms of many of the tests. We don't know who's making them.
Well, with the antibody tests, yeah, how good they are is the issue. And the FDA rushed them out and left it up to the company to actually do the validation and didn't really have to submit that to get to market it. So the concern was that there were literally hundreds of antibody tests that came out on the market. And when they first came out a couple of weeks ago, only four had been FDA approved. I think the number is either 7 or 11 now that are FDA approved. So the majority still are not approved. Mm-hmm. And then because of the concerns, they changed the rules last week and said that, the company had to generate, validation data and submit that before they could market it. And so, so they're trying to tighten up on that. But there are a lot of tests out there that aren't FDA approved. And,
so that brings a question up. How confident should somebody be, even if they are lucky enough to get a test, with the results,
Well, they tell you who it's from. So, I mean, you gotta kind of pick a company that's got it.
Do your homework.
You kind of get what you pay for. If you're taking one that, some company that hasn't submitted it, then... It may not be accurate at all. Like I said, the problem with the antibody tests is they're not necessarily going to be as specific, and you could have cross-reacting antibodies, and therefore you can, like I said, you could have antibodies to a cold virus that cross-reacts with their tests, and it may not really cross-react all that well with SARS-CoV-2. Not enough to neutralize it and give you protection, maybe enough to, in this case, it wouldn't even be cross-reacting with that. But I mean, enough to cross-react on the assay, whatever their target is, and give a positive, but not necessarily be protective. And the positives, like I said, I've seen a few of those results from ones that were done by... LabCorp and I think Quest, and they don't really have a titer. They just say positive or negative. And, and so without a number, it's hard to say whether they're a positive is protective or not. I mean, if you had a titer on it, you would have an idea, at least a ballpark, whether you got, if you had a titer of 40, then that would be kind of borderline-ish, and that might not offer protection. But if it was, 520 or 1040, then, that's a pretty strong result, and that's probably going to give you protection. But they don't give you that. They just say positive or negative. And so even if you got an approved test, if you're borderline positive, they're not really doing a neutralization test. I mean, a neutralization test is more involved. And in that, they would take your antibodies and see if it would prevent the virus from growing. And that's a much more involved type of an assay. The type they're offering, they're doing it in mass, assays on 96 well plates, and they're just looking for binding, and they're probably doing a deletion. If they're not giving a titer, maybe they're not even doing a dilution. But the way they're typically done for a titer is you do a serial dilution of the antibody, and then it generates a curve. But it's all done automatically, so it's pretty easy to generate that curve and figure out what the titer is. And that's a quick assay. That's a quick ELISA assay. That's not the same as a
that's
a neutralization
not the best
assay.
The best test. So, no.
So it's quicker, and like I say, if you do the dilution, you at least get a curve. So that gives you a number for a titer, and it's based upon, you know, multiple readings, and they basically complement each other. So you can look at the readings and tell whether it's a reasonable looking curve, and that's what the titer is, and that's much more informative than just a positive or a negative. So, anyway, the antibody tests are a little bit iffy still, and
you usually
need a prescription to actually run it. But okay. I mean, to order it, but go on.
All right, let me jump over here to Japan, the venue for the SS Corona Princess. Japan has an older population. I think most people know that. Do you know what their stats are right now, Henry? And this was running loose in Japan. They had cases. It was there. The current Japan coronavirus case totals are 15,847. The number of deaths in Japan to date, 633, not 80,000. So what did Japan do that we didn't? That's a big question.
Well,
we don't have to spend much time on that, but
well, there's two answers there, and I mean, this has been covered in the media now, but not really as much as it should. I mean, I'm still annoyed at the whole thing, but the Italian strain is much harder to control.
Yeah,
and that's the strain that really made the U.S. number one. I mean, the U.S. still bungled it enough. I mean, they're number one, and other countries in Europe got a lot of the Italian strain. I mean, that's what most of Europe is, and they had higher case fatality rates than they did in Asia. But it's really the original virus was not as virulent, especially of the Italian strain, Italian lineage. And so, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, you may argue, well, there are a lot more dead in China than they acknowledge. But the reality is that the virus that was in China did go into these adjacent countries. I mean, they did go into South Korea, they did go into Japan, they went to Singapore, they went to Hong Kong. And all of these countries kind of got things under control for the first round. And the numbers all pale by comparison to what's in the United States or even what's in Europe. And so on the one hand, they have more experience with these outbreaks because of, you know, bird flu that's probably the main thing, of bird flu, the H5N1 or the H7N9. And so they, you know, have experience with testing and quarantining and kind of getting localized outbreaks under control. And they had SARS. I mean, they had SARS much more intense. I mean, the U.S. had maybe a dozen cases, and none of them were very serious. They never even got a virus sequence out of SARS. And Canada really only had one, although they stopped trying because they thought it was too dangerous. But the bottom line was that most of the activity from the SARS outbreak was in Asia. And it was mostly in mainland China, but then it, you know, spilled over into Taiwan and Singapore and North Korea or North Vietnam. They've got that type of experience, and they got these under control. And I don't think the virus was as virulent. And that's why not only did China report lower numbers, I mean, all of their numbers pale in comparison to what the U.S. had. I mean, the U.S. is head and shoulders above everybody. And Europe is quite a bit ahead of Asia. So all of the outbreaks in Asia, not just China, but all of these other Asian countries, all had a much easier time of controlling the virus when it was the original Wuhan strain. But then it got a few mutations here and a few mutations there and generated these three different lineages that compromised most of the more recent cases. And the vast majority of those three lineages is the Italian lineage. The Italian lineage has taken over. And that's what jumped into Africa and South America. And now it's going into India and it's all over Russia and it's almost all over the United States. It started more on the East Coast, but it's gone up and down the East Coast, and now it's gone into the Midwest, and it's showing up. It's in San Diego now, and it's in Arizona, and it's making inroads into...
It broomed away its predecessor. That's the point. It just swept it away.
And so when you compare the U.S. numbers to these earlier numbers in Asia, you know, they're like night and day. I mean, these... Like you said, they ended up with the number of cases they ended up for their whole outbreak is on a par what the U.S. has every day. We're still at 25,000 cases a day, and it was slightly lower over the weekend. But, you know, we're over 80,000 dead, and we'll go up to 90,000 by the end of this week. If you notice, Trump said he used higher numbers today. He went and he started talking about 90,000 or 100,000, and then he said it's currently 80,000. So he was talking about dead. And he didn't talk about, you know, a number that was going to be reached this week, but he did. But he did talk about a number that's going to be reached next week. So I mean, it's around 82,000 today. So it's going to get to 90,000 by the end of this week, and unless it dramatically slows down, it's going to get to 100,000 by the end of next week. So by the end of next week, it's going to be at 100,000 dead in the U.S. And the U.S. is already at one-third of the world's total. Mm-hmm. So, and I said that there's a good chance that the U.S. will catch the rest of the world. And more than 50% of the cases worldwide will be here. And the reason I say that is because not only does the U.S. have a big lead, but I think the opening up of these states, it's going to be a disaster. And I think it's going to be a disaster in part because of Trump. I mean, Trump is not an example. Trump is going and saying to Pennsylvania, oh, you should open up earlier, even though they're scheduled for a fairly big opening this Friday. I mean, pretty much the only part of Pennsylvania that's not going to be you know, opening up by Friday is, you know, Eastern Pennsylvania, which is Philadelphia area and adjacent to New Jersey. I mean, all of the cases, well, not all, but the high level counties are the ones that are adjacent to New Jersey, you know, all the way up and down the state line in the east. And so those counties are not opening up, but pretty much everything else is. I mean, the northern counties opened up last week, and then now the western and southwestern counties are opening up on Friday. Mm-hmm. But in spite of that, Trump's tweeting away on, to get Pennsylvania open. And he's just pushing these things because, I mean, the counties in the East really aren't ready. They have, there's over, I think it's getting close to 4,000, 3,500 anyway, deaths in Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania has a lot. And the vast majority are, probably 80% of those deaths are in Eastern PA. And, that's the area that he wants to open up. And it's crazy to take those counties with, are literally reporting.
Who's advising him to do this that he's listening to? Do you know?
Well, certainly not any scientists. It's not any scientists.
Somebody's telling him. It's not Fauci. We know that's not. It's not Birx.
Well, he's got a timeline. He thinks
it's the re-election timeline. It's the same old story.
It's a fantasy though, because there's no way that things are going to turn around by election time. I mean, this is, there's going to be 20% unemployment, the next report. And this isn't recession levels. This is depression levels. And people are not going to be jumping up and going to restaurants. I mean, some are. And that's partially from Trump saying it's not a big deal and not. Yeah, you don't need a mask. I mean, he presents all the wrong messages. And because of that, I mean, you're going to have people that get shot because they said you can't come into the store without a mask. And it's just, crazy. I mean, these guys want to go into go around infecting other people because they don't want to wear a mask. And who does that sound like? But in any event, it's not going to go well. They're going to loosen these things up. Different, people are going to go overboard. I mean, they got a problem in South Korea now because it was in Seoul and one guy was, going from, one nightclub to another. He was clubbing, like a week and a half ago or so. And I don't know, I think they're trying to trace like 900 people or something, and they've already got, I think, over 100 positives. Uh-huh. And so they have things under control there, and one guy is done. Literally hundreds of people were infected by just one evening, at three different venues. Uh-huh. And so that's going to happen here. I mean, in the United States, you've already got these concentrations at the retirement homes, at the food processing places, and at the prisons. And the virus isn't contained inside of those places. It's spreading inside of those places, but it includes people that are working there and then go home and take the virus to their families or go shopping and take it to their neighborhoods. And so there's plenty of virus floating around. And like I say, the 20,000 or 25,000 cases, 25,000 during the week and 20,000 over the weekend. So those are daily increases. They're not daily total. They're daily increases. So these are new cases every day, 25,000 cases. And they're going to translate into deaths. It's going to take a few weeks. And, right now the deaths are a little bit down, but that's from when things kind of slowed down a month ago or so. And, and then the ones that have been, being detected in the last several weeks are going to pretty much fill things up in the next month or so. So the numbers are going to go up. It really is going to get to 100,000 in a little over a week or the end of next week. So maybe it equals 2 weeks total. It'll be 90,000 at the end of this week. It'll be 100,000 at the end of next week. And people are going to look at that and they're going to say, well, it's 100,000. And by the end of next week, it's probably going to start going up because some of the
teaching
that was done last week is going to translate into new cases. And so all of a sudden, instead of 20,000 a day, it's going to be 25,000, 30,000, 40,000. All of a sudden, when it's 40,000, they're saying, well, we've never had 40,000 before. This is a new all-time high. Even, you know, when all these restrictions went on, it wasn't as high as 40,000 cases a day.
No.
And at 40,000 cases a day, you know, in 2 days, it's another 100,000. So all of a sudden now it's still summertime when, according to Trump, everything was gone in April. And you're getting 40, 50,000 people a day, going up 100,000 every other day. And and now we're in the millions. You're heading towards that.
We're heading toward the big M. That's right. All right. We got to wrap it up, Henry. Thank you. We'll we'll be back tomorrow night. We keep tracking it, and it's
there'll probably be a White House update by then.
I would think you're inside. We'll see. Okay. Thanks much. Great work.
Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.
All righty. Dr. Henry Nyman. All right, and we will be back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours. Thanks for being here. Hope you found it interesting. Talk to you tomorrow.